have to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Asad Abushagh, Palestinian academic and activist out of Dublin. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of Manchester. And thank you for being with us here on the spotlight once again. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off with the crew right here in Tehran and all the rest. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219. From the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Innallazina amanu wallazina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ هَاجَرُوا وَجَاهَدُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, heading a high-level delegation, arrives in the Pakistani capital Islamabad on an official two-day visit. Iran says Israel's systematic massacre of Gazans amounts to war crime, holding the regime responsible for the mass burial at Gaza's Al-Nasser Hospital. Two major American military bases in eastern Syria come under missile and drone attacks amid simmering anti-U.S. sentiments across the region. Thanks for joining us. Iran's president arrives in the Pakistani capital Islamabad on an official visit, where he is scheduled to meet with the neighboring country's leaders. Prior to his departure, Ebrahim Raisi said that his visit is aimed at boosting economic and trade ties with Pakistan. Raisi is accompanied by a high-ranking delegation as well as business representatives. The visit is part of mutual efforts to strengthen relations between Iran and Pakistan. Raisi will stay 3 days in the country before heading to Sri Lanka. Meanwhile, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the Israeli regime and its acts of aggression are the root causes of insecurity in the region. He made the comments during a phone conversation with his Finnish counterpart Elina Valtonen on Sunday. He said the Islamic Republic is not seeking tensions in West Asia, adding that the regional peace requires a right stance and an end to the West's double standards. The top Iranian diplomat also called for collective efforts to help end the genocidal war on Gaza, urging European governments to stop arming Israel. The Finnish foreign minister said, on her part, that the continuation of tensions in the region is not in the interest of anybody, adding that her country condemns any move that escalates the situation. She also said that Finland wants an immediate ceasefire in Gaza without preconditions. Iran has held Israel responsible for the massacre and mass burial inside Gaza's Nasser Hospital, saying the states supporting the regime are also accountable for the crime. The foreign ministry spokesman urged the UN chief, the rotating president of the Security Council, and the entire international community to condemn the horrific incident in Khan Yunis. Nasser Kanani also called for tapping into national, regional, and international potential to prosecute the culprits behind the crime perpetrated at the hospital. Kanani underlined that Israel's systematic and extensive massacres of Gazans clearly amounts to genocide and war crimes. The recovery of over 200 bodies from a mass grave inside the Nasser medical complex has also drawn condemnation from Hamas. The resistance movement says the discovery of the mass grave proves the extent of the Israeli crimes and atrocities committed against Palestinians. Hamas says the horrific crimes would have been impossible without Washington's backing for Israel. Palestinians continue to endure a U.S. Israeli genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip, the scene of death and destruction on a daily basis. In their latest attack, Israeli warplanes targeted two residential buildings in Rafah City, killing 19 Palestinians, including 14 children. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reports that some 48 Palestinians were killed and 79 others were injured in Gaza in the past 24 hours. That brings the total number of victims since October 7 to more than 34,000. The number of those wounded has also risen to almost 77,000. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said bodies of over 200 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. From Darabala, central Gaza, Timothy Abu Masaba joined us earlier for more on the mass graves that were uncovered in the Nasser Hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunis.
More heinous crimes are unfolding every moment here in the Gaza Strip, particularly in Khan Yunis city, whereas at least three mass graves were discovered over the last couple of hours in less than 24 hours inside the yards of the Nasser Medical Complex, including at least 210 Palestinian dead bodies. Those dead bodies were kidnapped and abducted inside the Nasser Medical Complex, and they were executed in cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces during their ground offensive against the Nasser Medical Complex over the last couple of months. According to Gaza civil defense crews, that at least 500 Palestinian civilians are estimated to be missed and buried in the same and still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses and the rubble of the facilities in Khan Yunis city. So we are facing more atrocities committed against the Palestinian people, and these atrocities actually present another substantial evidence on the brutality and the cruelty of the Israeli occupation forces when it comes to the Palestinian people. The vast majority of those dead bodies actually were extracted, and they were found actually blindfolded and handcuffed, which means that they were executed in cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces after being kidnapped and abducted. As I've mentioned, that according to Gaza civil defense crews, that at least 2,000 Palestinian civilians are estimated forcibly disappeared till this moment over the repetitive attacks against multiple areas in the Gaza Strip.
Tensions in the West Bank continue to rise as the Israeli occupation forces carry out yet another raid in the occupied territory. The Israeli regime has raided the northeastern West Bank city of Tubas. During the raid, explosions could be heard erupting across the city. Israeli incursions in the West Bank have only increased since the regime's genocidal war began on Gaza. Elsewhere in the West Bank, Palestinian resistance fighters have carried out an anti-Israeli operation in the occupied city of Al-Quds. According to initial reports, two Israelis have been wounded when a car ran over them. At least 482 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank by Israeli forces or settlers since the war began. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says that it shot down an Israeli drone over an area in the southern part of the country. Hezbollah said the targeted drone is the Hermes 450, adding that the operation was carried out in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The group has downed and intercepted several Israeli drones in recent months. The Lebanese resistance movements and the Israeli military have been training fire since October the 8th, a day after the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Hezbollah fires missiles and rockets at Israeli military sites in northern occupied territories, while Israel targets residential areas in southern Lebanon. Two U.S. military bases in Syria have come under fresh missile and drone attacks amid growing anti-American sentiments in the region. Lebanese media reports say four missiles hit the Al-Omar oil field base, while three missiles and a drone targeted the Kharab al-Jir base. Both facilities are located in the northeastern Syrian province of Hasaka. No group has yet claimed responsibility, but Reuters, citing security sources, said five rockets were fired from the Iraqi town of Zumar toward northeastern Syria, without giving further details. U.S. military facilities and bases in Syria have come under repeated attacks in recent months. Resistance forces in Iraq and elsewhere are outraged at the U.S. military presence in the region, which they say is a source of instability, as well as Washington's support for the Israeli regime in its ongoing genocidal war on Gaza. Back to our story in the occupied West Bank, Mona Kandil joins us now from occupied Ramallah to tell us more about that. Mona, good morning. What happened here?
Let's start with the recent incident here in the occupied territories. The Israeli military claims that a Palestinian arrived at one of the bus stations inside Al-Quds, and he rammed his vehicle into Israelis there in two different incidents, and that two Israelis had been wounded and transferred to hospitals inside Al-Quds. The Israeli military is claiming that this attacker, as they are saying, succeeded to flee the scene and left the area. They are searching for the Palestinian who carried out the car ramming. All checkpoints around Al-Quds have been closed. We are speaking about the Qalandia military checkpoint between the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds had been closed. The Israeli checkpoint of the container as well between Al-Quds and Beit Lahem and Al-Khalil has been closed, and no one is allowed to enter these areas, and a number of military checkpoints had been completely closed, with Israeli forces are searching for the possible attacker, as they claim. Here in the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers and forces attacks had been continued last night, and until the late hours of the night, Israeli settlers raided the village of Burqa near Ramallah. They set ablaze a number of Palestinian vehicles. They tried to burn a Palestinian home, and at the same time, the Israeli settlers set fire to a sheep barn, and they slaughtered a number of goats and sheep, according to the residents of Burqa. And at the same time, the Israeli forces raided the village of Burqa in order to provide cover for the Israeli settlers. We are speaking about this incident that comes amid a spike of Israeli settlers' attacks here in the occupied West Bank. In only a few days, Israeli settlers shot and killed four Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli forces, meanwhile, stormed several areas across the occupied West Bank. They raided Qalqilia, Tobas, Maythaloun, South Jenin, and northern the occupied West Bank. And the Israeli forces surrounded a house there in Balata refugee camp, East Nablus. Exchange of fire have taken place between the Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. And the Israeli troops stormed Douma village south in Nablus and arrested a number of Palestinians there. We have to mention that in all these areas, Palestinians had been detained, where we can say that every day at least a dozen of Palestinians are being detained by the Israeli forces across the occupied West Bank.
Thank you so much for that. Mona Kandil, we appreciate it. Mona Kandil from Occupied Ramallah. Well, in our news review program earlier, we discussed the significance of Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel, hailed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Let's take a listen.
It's news review time. The leader of the Islamic Revolution says Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel demonstrated its resolve internationally. Ayatollah Khamenei said that the establishment of this willpower is what has angered the enemy. The leader made the comments while meeting with Iran's top military commanders. He hailed the armed forces for giving a good impression of their capacities and power and a commendable image of the Iranian nation. Ayatollah Khamenei was referring to the massive missile and drone strikes against Israel after regime's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Now, I'm inviting two guests to discuss this a bit more. Hakima Savaybiri is an academic and political analyst in Tehran. Farokh Sekalashvar, Islamic scholar, joining me from Qom. Good to have you both. Beginning with Hakima, tell us your assessment of all this media propaganda, especially in the West, trying to undermine this, showing some images that Iran has caused some minor damage here and there, and whereas Iran had already said that this is only a warning. It was not meant for destruction. That's what Iran has actually done.
Iran was not aiming at destroying Israel on that night, but that to show its determination and its resolve to take action whenever needed. And at this time, the idea was to hit, the place that was, used for committing the, the act of terror against the Iranian consulate. So that actually was done. So I think it is important to understand that what we are witnessing today is seeing Iran's capabilities, on the ground. We are seeing Iran's resolve to take action whenever needed and at the right time with the right amount of power. And I think the people of the world, and especially those who are concerned about the plight of the Palestinians, those who are concerned about the continuation of the genocide that is happening in Palestine, the continuation of Israeli atrocities all around the region, basically against different targets, including Iranian targets, are happy with what they have seen.
Okay. Now let me move to city of Qom, Farouk. Iran had already given warnings, and that on multiple occasions, not once and once and twice. And there were some who were saying that Iran is only talking about this, it will never take action, but Iran did take action, as it had a warning. It had warned already. So let our viewers know what message this action conveys to both the adversaries and ill-wishers of the Islamic establishment.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The first point was that the power of deterrence that the Israeli regime supposed to have had proved out to be a spider web deterrence. And this in itself was their greatest defeat. And the whole world saw this. Before this, such a deterrence was keeping them at least mentally ahead, and it was looming over the Muslim masses. But alhamdulillah, Iran, the most important thing, with Allah's permission, that they did was to not only show their capabilities, but in addition to that, ruin and put an end to the deterrence that they had and show to the world that this was nothing. It was all imagination and they have nothing. And for the Muslim masses, there's nothing to fear. This was the greatest defeat.
Thank you, my guests, Hakim Saqaibiri in Tehran and Farouk Sekalashvar in the city of Qom.
The European NGO has called for investigations into the role of major technology companies and international social media platforms in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. UN Human Rights Monitor said those companies must be held accountable if they are found to be complicit in the crime. According to Euromet, those firms will also be needed to hold into account in case of their failure to prevent access to users' information and its exploitation. The Geneva-based group pointed to frequent reports that Israel uses a number of artificial intelligence-supported technological systems to illegally track and monitor Palestinians. The NGO said that it has been recently revealed that the U.S. tech giant Google and Israel are collaborating on several technology initiatives. Euromet's call comes as UN experts warned earlier this month that Israel's use of AI in Gaza is leading to an unprecedented toll on civilian population and infrastructure. And that does it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The Zionist regime is abusing UNRWA employees detained in Gaza in order to extract forced confessions against the agency, with detainees describing being subjected to acts of torture. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "The Zionist regime is abusing UNRWA employees detained in Gaza in order to extract forced confessions against the agency, with detainees describing being subjected to acts of torture. The forced confessions are likely to be used by the Zionist regime in an attempt to incriminate UNRWA, the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees. The Zionist regime is seeking to starve UNRWA out of existence through smears and unsubstantiated allegations aimed at drying up the agency's voluntary funding." Philip Lazzarini, the head of the embattled agency, told the UN Security Council recently that the Zionist regime continues to block the provision of life-saving aid as part of its insidious campaign to push UNRWA out of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. More than a dozen countries, including top donors US and Germany, froze funding or suspended future support for UNRWA after the Zionist regime alleged that 12 of its employees were involved in the October 7th operation. The allegations were made public by the agency on January 26, the same day that the UN's World Court stated there is a plausible risk of genocide in Gaza. The fabricated regime of Israel has not presented the UN with evidence substantiating its allegations. Despite this, UNRWA dismissed the employees in question. The UN Secretary General ordered an investigation and an independent review of the agency's adherence to neutrality is expected to make its findings public in the coming days. During the Security Council meeting recently, Gilad Erdan, the Zionist regime's ambassador to the UN, accused UNRWA of creating a sea of Palestinian refugees, millions of them indoctrinated to believe that Israel belongs to them, unquote. UNRWA provides government-like services to 5.9 million registered Palestine refugees in Gaza, the West Bank, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. The agency is mandated by the UN General Assembly to serve the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who were displaced from their homeland during the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in 1948 and as a result of the 1967 and subsequent hostilities, as well as their descendants. Palestinian refugees' right of return is enshrined in UN General Assembly Resolution 194. The Zionist regime has denied Palestinians from exercising this right because doing so would alter the demographic character of Israel to the point of eliminating it as a Jewish state, as the UN's Economic and Social Commission for West Asia stated in a 2017 report. Several UN special rapporteurs stated in June 2023 on the occasion of World Refugee Day that since 1948, both the General Assembly and the Security Council have consistently called upon Israel to facilitate the return of Palestinian refugees and provide reparations. The special rapporteurs affirm that the right of return constitutes a fundamental pillar of the Palestinian people's right to self-determination. Around two-thirds of Gaza's population of 2.3 million Palestinians are refugees. Nearly every Palestinian in the territory has been displaced from their home in the past 6 months. And the Zionist regime has gunned down people attempting to return to the areas from which they were displaced. A majority of Gaza's population is now concentrated in Rafah, along the boundary with Egypt, raising fears of a mass expulsion from the territory. At least 178 UNRWA employees are among the 34,000 Palestinians murdered in Gaza since October 7th. The Zionist regime has banned UNRWA from delivering aid to Gaza's north as children are dying of hunger and dehydration in violation of consecutive orders from the International Court of Justice to allow the unimpeded flow of aid. Lazzarini told the Security Council that we demand an independent investigation and accountability for the blatant disregard for the protected status of humanitarian workers, operations and facilities under international law. UNRWA staff released from Israeli detention told their employer that in addition to ill treatment that may amount to torture, they were subjected to threats and coercion and pressure during interrogations to incriminate the agency. These forced confessions against the agency included that the agency has affiliations with the resistance groups and that UNRWA staff took part in the October 7th operation against the Zionist regime. According to UNRWA, some staff members were detained during the performance to their official duties for the UN, including while working at UNRWA installations, and in one case during a coordinated humanitarian movement. Detained UNRWA staff were subjected to a litany of abuses, they say, such as beatings, including by doctors, attacks by dogs, and threats of rape and electrocution. The agency said that its employees underwent treatment akin to waterboarding and had guns pointed at them. UNRWA staff also experienced verbal and psychological abuse, threats of murder, injury or harm to family members, humiliating and degrading treatment, being forced to strip and being photographed while they are undressed and being forced to hold stress positions. The agency has collected information from hundreds of Palestinians, men, women, and children, who were detained in Gaza since the beginning of Israel's ground operation in late October last year. Palestinians in Gaza have been detained by Israeli regime forces while sheltering in UNRWA facilities under the protection of the UN flag since mid-November. They have also been detained while attempting to flee south while working in hospitals or in the sanctity of their homes. Overall, possibly thousands of Palestinians, men and boys, and a number of women and girls have been detained in Gaza, the UN Human Rights Office said in mid-December. UNRWA says that as of April 4th, it has documented the release of more than 1,500 detainees from Gaza through the Karam Abu Salem crossing with Israel, including 43 children and 84 women. Detainees said they were taken in trucks to various detention centers in Israel and held incommunicado in between periods of interrogation, sometimes for several weeks, according to UNRWA. The transfer and detention of detainees outside of occupied territory are war crimes that violate the Fourth Geneva Convention and Rome Statute of International Criminal Court. The Zionist regime authorities subjected Palestinians, men and women, children, older persons with disabilities, according to UNRWA, to ill treatment throughout their detention.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be covering Iran's response to Israel's murderous missile assault on the Iranian consulate in Damascus earlier this month. The corporate media once again failed in its duty to report accurately about Israel and typically resorted to simply parroting Israel's version of events. But contrary to what Western political leaders and media commentators have said, Iran's drone and missile strike, codenamed Operation True Promise, did achieve its objective, as Latifa Abouchaker will explain in this report.
In what CNN reported was the largest drone attack in world history, the Islamic Republic of Iran struck at the Zionist entity on Saturday, the 13th of April. It was in response to the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, carried out a fortnight before. CNN also noted it was an operation which seemed planned to minimize casualties, in stark contrast to the previous 6 months of the Zionist genocide in Gaza. According to the Zionists, the operation was ineffective in that 99% of the drones and missiles launched were intercepted. But, of course, as the experience of the resistance axes shows, the most efficient way to defeat the Iron Dome system is to overwhelm and confuse it. In addition, however, it is plain that the missiles which did strike home, in particular at the Nevatim airbase in the Naqab Desert, caused significant damage to the base. F-35 aircraft departed from here to bomb the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Western media are very reluctant to even mention the other major target, an intelligence base for Israeli military intelligence known as Unit 8200. The Zionists tried their best to suppress all mention of the attack on the top secret base, which, as the Israeli press has previously noted, is the first line of defense in preventing surprise attacks, and is an outpost that has been labeled the eyes of the nation. The chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces, Major General Mohammad Baghari, noted that the operation against Iran in Damascus was directed from here. The outpost is located literally inside the mountain in tunnels dug in the 1980s in the illegally occupied Golan Heights. It's not only the Palestinian resistance that has tunnels. The Islamic Republic quoted the right to self-defense, Article 51 of the UN Charter. The Russian Foreign Ministry cited Article 51 in its own response, failing to accede to Zionist demands to condemn Iran. China too did not condemn Iran, calling its response restrained. Though it was condemned by the West, some Western figures conceded its legitimacy, albeit grudgingly. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron was asked what the UK government would do if a hostile nation flattened one of Britain's consulates. He answered, "We would take very strong action."
What would Britain do if a hostile nation flattened one of our consulates?
Well, we would take, you know, we would take the very strong action.
He also appeared to simply take issue with the proportionality of the strike.
Countries have a right to respond when they feel they've suffered an aggression. Of course they do.
Operation True Promise was the first direct military strike on Israel by the Islamic Republic. It's unlikely to be the last. It utilized a tiny fraction of the available armaments, and it showed that it can successfully penetrate the much vaunted air defense systems of the Zionist entity.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. And joining us once again as our guest commentator is Batul Sabeti. Batul is a human rights activist and political analyst. She blogs at Stances to Salvation, and in her professional life, she's a chemical engineer based in London. Welcome to the show. Batul, you've already written, haven't you, about Operation True Promise, and you've argued that Iran is trying to actually avoid a regional war. Just set out what your rationale is for arguing that point.
Right. Iran has never wanted war. It's Israel that's consistently transgressed through its assassinations, its cyber attacks, spreading terrorist bombings inside Iran. Israel was not expecting Iran to respond in this way, though. But ultimately, Iran proved that it's a new era. The time for Israel to hit Iranian generals without facing direct consequences is long gone, and Iranian sovereignty is ultimately that red line. The Iranian strategy of response, though, is based on Gaza remaining the focus. To turn it ultimately into a regional conflict is giving Israel what it wants, because that would free Israel's hand in Gaza, as the world will be distracted away from their mass genocide, and that would ultimately facilitate Israel's only plan for Gaza, which is to create unbearable conditions to get rid of Gaza altogether. So the Iranian response comes with what serves the strategy of Gaza remaining under the microscope and not what serves its enemy strategy, because Israel's always wanted America to fight Iran on its behalf because Iran represents an existential threat to it. So what Iran wants to do is it wants to halt the Israeli war on Gaza. It considers this to be the greatest victory because the war would have ended with the Gazan resistance standing strong. But at the same time, Iran has also sent a direct message, and that is, if we want to respond in a strong manner, it will be something else. And if Israel is stupid enough to escalate, Iran will make it much worse.
Right. Well, from a military perspective then, David, I mean, in your opinion, how effective was Iran's actions in this occasion?
Well, the question of what military success is something which, of course, is part of the debate. So, of course, the Zionists said 99% of these missiles were downed. Now, that might actually be true, startlingly enough. But the question is not whether they downed all these drones which were sent deliberately in order to fox the Iron Dome system and to distract it from the really serious missiles which did hit their targets, the hypersonic missiles which were sent over by Iran, take 12 minutes to get there. Those hit their targets. But some people have said, well, it didn't put the base out of operation. The science have been saying that as well. Well, the point of an operation like this is not to put the base out of operation, not to destroy the Zionist entity's defences, but to show that at will they can do that. And that in the future, that will be exactly what will happen. Mm. And there can be no doubt. So the Zionists might say, oh, well, it was terribly unsuccessful. The Iranians can't even do anything right. But actually, they know in reality that this is an indication that their air defences, including the air defences helped by the Americans, by the UK, they are not going to be adequate, even for a small number of missiles. And the Iranians, of course, have got a large number of missiles.
Mm-hmm. So the Iron Dome can maybe deal with drones, but not these hypersonic
That's
missiles.
That's right, yes.
Well, Batul, the Islamic Republic targeted military sites, which is in stark contrast, isn't it, to what the Zionists actually do?
Right. Iran's strike sent multiple messages in terms of the limits of deterrence and its options, you know, whether that's through the quantity, the magnitude and the type of attack that it launched. That is to say that our missiles, yes, they flew above political institutions like the Knesset, for example, but we're not going to hit them, nor will we hit densely populated areas or economic centres. Ultimately, we are going to respond from the areas in which Israel targeted our consulate. So hit the Israeli Nevatim Air Base, for example, or hit the intelligence headquarters in the Golan Heights that was involved in the consulate's attack. Iran is not like the Israeli occupation entity. Iran abides by international law in the events of war. It doesn't target those who are considered civilians. And in this way, they're also not warranting an Israeli response. You know, there's no excuse for Israel to then expand the war because it's a tit for tat. But Israel, on the other hand, they're targeting civilians in the most unprecedented fashion, and that's for two reasons. Number one, create the most unbearable conditions for Gaza in hopes that they can get rid of Gaza altogether because they have no other plan. And number two, their failure translates into anger and revenge. Israel hasn't achieved a single military strategic objective since October the 7th. It hasn't freed a single hostage through war. Resistance infrastructure and institutions are still intact. And this is all due to the morale of the Palestinians. You know, they managed through guerrilla warfare tactics, coupled with real bravery of coming at zero distance from their enemy, to prevent Israeli soldiers from reaching every corner in Gaza to dismantle their resistance.
Mm. Well, David, the military sites that were targeted by Iran included the secret intelligence base in the Golan, didn't it? Mm. What do we know about that?
Well, this is a top secret base. It was revealed in the Israeli press some years ago that it existed, and it's referred to as being a top secret base at the time. Some people are now saying, oh, well, everyone knew this was there. It's not a secret at all. But, you know, if you look back at the press, you can see that that's how they regarded it. And it's a base which is a signals intelligence base for Unit 8200, which, of course, is the signals intelligence, military intelligence operation of the Israelis, who we've discussed in this program lots of times.
Yes, yes,
and so what they're doing there is they're the nation's eyes and ears. They're there to check first when attacks are coming, and of course they were involved in the attack on Damascus on the Iranian consulate. Mm-hmm. So this is a secret base. Yes, it's an intelligence base, and it's at the forefront of Israel's intelligence operations. So the indication here is, of course, that this is a base that the Iranians know where it is, mm-hmm. and they can hit it. And so, so again, this is the same as the Nevatim base, which sent the fighters and the bombers to a target, Damascus. This is an indication that at will, Iran can hit whatever targets it wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, Batul, I mean, you've referred, haven't you, to the lack of confidence in the Zionist entity now. And, I mean, that collective nervousness has seen some settlers rushing to leave, hasn't it?
Right. So in 75 years, this is the first attack of its kind on Israeli soil. Israel demonizes Iran as an existential threat to Israel without direct confrontation. So now the settlers are really feeling the heat. There's real uncertainty and tremble. They feel it's serious and it's threatening. And we have to understand the subconscious of the settler is that they have the upper hand on everything. The whole world is behind them. You know, in previous wars, as long as they can get away with the things that they're doing, America will keep protecting them. And for the first time, these 6 months have ultimately proved that Israel is not capable of achieving anything. You know, you've already got 100K that were displaced from the north and around Gaza. Its economy is in tatters. There are internal divisions. It's all gloom across Israel from whatever aspect you take it. The settlers feel Netanyahu is playing on them for his own interests. He doesn't care about the hostages. They feel a lack of security because not only has Israel failed to defeat the Gazan resistance, that is the weakest link in the whole resistance axis. So now imagine fighting with the source of the resistance, that is Iran, right? But even America has threatened that its support is conditional if Israel continues dealing in a manner opposed to America. We're seeing Europe and America buckling at the pressure of the world against Israel. So all in all, these settlers are coming to milk and honey land. When it turns into onion and garlic land, they're going to leave.
Well, David, I wonder what, I mean, we heard on the film there, David Cameron sort of tacitly acknowledging, didn't he, that Iran's actions were legitimate. What do you make of that?
Well, we played the little clips there, and if you play those clips like that, it makes it seem like he's doing that. But of course, that's all couched in the top line which he's giving, which is this is an entirely unacceptable attack. But actually, if you listen carefully to the words and listen to what he's actually saying, it's actually clear that he's saying that this is a legitimate operation. It's just that it was disproportionate, which of course is what they quite often say about Israel. They were wrong to kill so many children. They could have killed a few less children. But they're saying that this attack was disproportionate, and that's the best that they can come up with. So that's really interesting to hear the British government say that. Of course, Cameron is not an ideological neoconservative, but he goes with the wind on that question. But here we are. They actually recognise that this is a legitimate operation.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard the exchange in the House of Commons yesterday, but it seems to me, and obviously he can't report to the House of Commons because he's in the House of Lords, the British Foreign Secretary, but he seemed to go considerably further than virtually every single member of the House of Commons on both sides of the chamber. I mean, that's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, but Cameron's like that, isn't he? He's not ideologically neoconservative, so he's more of a realist in some ways, and therefore he'll make these kind of comments which don't really fit with the line which the rest of the government would want him to say.
Yeah, well, we'll come back anyway now to the discussion after our next report about the reaction in the region to Operation True Promise.
The Iranian operation was widely welcomed in the region. In Tehran, crowds gathered in the streets to celebrate. They lit flares and set off fireworks. The Iranian parliament stood as one to cheer the strike. Meanwhile, Palestinians gathered in the West Bank chanting, "God is great," as Iranian missiles soared overhead. In Jordan, while the government collaborated with the Zionist entity, the citizens were out on the streets. Meanwhile, in Gaza, there were relieved observations that for the first time in months, there were no drones overhead and bombing in Rafah and the rest of Gaza was suspended. The next day, three bakeries opened their doors in Gaza for the first time in 6 months. These had reportedly been authorized by the Zionist regime, itself a scandalous indication that they had been forcibly closed by the Zionists. In the West Bank, Palestinians took matters into their own hands and tore down sections of the apartheid wall. Unfortunately, genocidal Jewish settlers also launched a mass pogrom against a Palestinian village northeast of Ramallah. The sooner the settlers are driven out, the sooner peace can come. But the Iranian retaliation has certainly given confidence and increased morale of Palestinians all over the world.
Well, David, what's the reaction of the Palestinian resistance to Iran's actions?
Well, you can follow it, of course, on social media, statement after statement from the Qassam Brigades, Hamas, from Palestinian Islamic Jihad, from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, even from Fatah al-Intifada, who've put out statements, all of them are welcoming this. So, and let's remember that the Palestinian resistance is predominantly Sunni Muslim, welcoming this apparently Shia octopus, as Gilad Erdan, the Israeli ambassador to the UN, put it the other day. There are strikes against Israel. So there's an indication here that it doesn't matter whether you're Sunni or Shia. It's about welcoming something which supports the resistance activities. And, of course, that's what all of the resistance has done.
Mm. Well, Batul, would you say that this has boosted morale, then, of ordinary Palestinians?
No doubt. Palestine doesn't feel alone. There are others coming to its aid. For the first time, there's a real equivalent deterrence capability. People feel the likelihood of victory now. Enemy planes were distracted by the Iranian drones. You know, real missiles reached and hit the main targets, and that's what matters. You know, there is confidence in the capability of victory. With Iran especially, that's the strongest in the axis, directly now joining the supporting fronts of Lebanon and Yemen and Iraq to bring about a halt to the war in Gaza. So if the war ends now, it's a victory by all means. You know, that's why Iran does not want to expand the war, because an expanded war causes confusion. People debate interests and motives rather than seeing the truth for what it is. Iran prefers that calm work, you know, not winning through decisive blows, but on a point-by-point basis. Ultimately, what matters now is Israel is weak and trembling. It was if it was not for America's mobilization of all its forces in the region just to detect the Iranian drones and missiles and hit them, Israel couldn't have defended itself at all. You know, so for America to go along with Israel now is only to prevent its collapse and its disintegration. And to work with Israel is an order for America to pass its vision and not allow the Israel to continue blundering. Otherwise, America made it very clear that it will not participate on an attack in Iran. Israel is ultimately alone in this.
Mm. Well, David, would you say then that those huge queues of Palestinians outside the reopened bakeries were as a direct consequence of Iran's missile strikes?
No, it seems not. I thought that when I first saw them, but no, it seems not. Extraordinarily, the Zionists had given permission for these World Food Programme bakeries to open, some 20 of them, is now something like 23 of them open in Gaza, which is an indication, of course, that they had previously forbidden there to be bakeries in operation, which is itself hugely problematic and, of course, part of the whole genocide there. So what we do see is an increased confidence of the Palestinians. We see that in the people openly queuing for the bread, but also the fact that many thousands of Gazans are now making their way back to Gaza City, into the north of Gaza, even while they're being attacked by the IDF, the occupation forces, for doing so. So it's a huge increase in the confidence in general of the Palestinian people. You can see them marching back there to North Gaza.
Yes, indeed.
On the screen. So this is an indication that for them, you know, there's a re-establishment of civilization in Gaza, and a rebuilding can start. And that, of course, is completely contrary to everything that the Zionists want.
Mm-hmm. So if it wasn't as a result of the Iran's missile strikes, I mean, what do you think precipitated Israel giving permission then, given that they stopped them opening those, well, bombed them, even, didn't they, anyway?
Well, it's the pressure on them from America, isn't it, that have forced them backwards.
Yes.
Even prior to the Damascus imbroglio, it's forced them backwards, and they've been forced to reopen the water pipes, allow some food aid in, although they're still interfering with that, and allowing some of these bakeries to open. So they've been forced back, because they were trying to starve Gaza. into submission, and they were making the plans to invade Rafah, which now appear to have been cancelled as a direct result of this Iranian strike.
Well, Batul, do you think Iran's action has forced the Zionist regime to postpone the attack on Rafah then?
It's already been postponed. And actually what we're seeing is the situation in Gaza has slightly calmed down as well. Yesterday, Bloomberg stated on the Israeli military intelligence, Amos Yadlin, that the Iranian attack may lead to a strategic change in the war in Gaza and even its end. So the priority for Israel right now is certainly Iran. The West is applying pressure also on Israel to come to its terms of the political settlement. And there is more desperation we can see from the West to end the war altogether because it's becoming uncontrollable. It's becoming beyond the ability to control what comes after. It's more than ever we're in a position where we're nearing the reach of a deal. This attack has already created a much better ground and atmosphere for Palestinian negotiators. It's really strengthened the Palestinian position on the negotiating table. And the truth is, if other than Netanyahu was in power, this war would have ended. Netanyahu currently is the stumble block. With that being said, though, America's decision always ends up reigning because they are the ones that are in control of the course. So the continuation of this war is only in favor of the resistance. The region supports the resistance. The military solution has failed. And so America wants to push the political settlements now in hopes that that will weaken the resistance. And ultimately, Iran's strike and Iran's ability to retaliate is certainly helping in reaching that ceasefire.
So in that case, then, what's the calculus then going forward, David? I mean, do you think the Americans actually realise that this has been a, you know, major defeat for the Zionists?
Well, it's difficult to read through the reams and reams of propaganda and work out what's going on here. But the Americans were apparently saying to Netanyahu, oh, look, this is a victory for you, so you don't need to strike back. Well, of course, nobody thinks that it was a victory for Netanyahu. And, of course, the Americans don't think that either. The Americans know because not only do they know that the missiles hit, but they also were monitoring the missiles themselves and providing intelligence to the Israelis in order to shoot down those ones that which they did. So, of course, the Americans know this was a massive defeat, and as does everybody else in the world, even while the mainstream press is pretending this was a failed operation by Iran and most of these missiles were shot down, everybody knows in the military intelligence establishment that this was a massive defeat for Israel, and indeed shows that Iran can strike at will, should it wish to. But it's making it very clear it didn't wish to at this time.
What do you think's making the Americans then backtrack somewhat? Because they've given unqualified support so far, haven't they?
Because they don't want a regional war. It's the same with their question in relation to Yemen. I mean, just the other day, they made all sorts of offers to Ansarallah in Yemen, the government of Yemen, and Ansarallah came back and said, no, we don't want any of that. No, we want the bombing to stop in Gaza. That's our price. Sure. And of course, the Americans don't want a war with Ansarallah because they can't defeat them. And they can't defeat Iran. So this is game over for them. They have to back off because not even the Americans want to take on Ansarallah and indeed Iran, never mind Israel, and Israel can't do it alone.
Well, Batul, what do you think this means for the future then?
The ending of the war at this rate is a big victory for the resistance that is not just winning on the ground, but has gained support of global public opinion, whilst Israel is increasingly becoming a pariah in global politics. Israel had one task: triumph against the weakest link in the resistance axis, that is Gaza. They failed. Israel is ultimately becoming a burden, so its role for the West will naturally shrink to match its true size. World politics is not a charity. If you dig a ditch and fall into it, they'll help you out. One time, two times, three times. By the third or fourth round, they'll not waste their time, energy and resources to their own detriment to help an entity that keeps tripping. Israel will naturally fit its real size through the two-state solution. America wants stability in the region. This, of course, doesn't mean that the two-state solution or the American strategy will be successful. For the first time, though, we are seeing that the Palestinian cause, due to October the 7th, has become a priority in every nation's agenda in every election. Public opinion at this rate cannot be reversed. Support for Israel, therefore, will reduce with time. America will need to find a substitute. We need to understand that Biden is not defending Israel as Israel. He's defending the imperialist project represented by Israel until he can determine what it will settle on. And so for America to go along with Israel right now is to prevent its collapse and disintegration at the hands of the resistance. But ultimately, what it wants to do is it wants to drag Israel to fit within the American vision of providing stability for the region and not continuing with its manic genocidal tendencies.
No, indeed. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. So thank you to our guest, Batul Sebaiti, and of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. I hope you'll join us next time for more forensic investigations and analysis. But until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the negative effects of the cyberspace, also known as the virtual world, on the family and the foundation of the family, relation between family members. A major question is about the picture we make out of the worlds. Is it the same, the usage of social media in the developed countries and the non-developed ones? I mean, the food that we consume socially, I mean, in terms of the media, is it the same in the developed and the non-developed ones or not?
I'm not sure if I can give a complete answer for that I haven't completely looked at what people are fed over there versus what people are fed over here.
Taking a look at the, because you had experience of living over there, you know, in non-Islamic lands, are the people usually busy with what the people in the non-developed lands are busy with or not over there?
It's almost the same, obviously, over there, because, you know,